98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Auction Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Burnsy, what's going on?
Oh, it is Thursday. We are one day closer to the weekend. Big football weekend. Home opener for the Arizona Cardinals fans at State Farm Stadium. Huge game for ASU on Saturday night. Huge game.
Yeah, I don't think it affects their ability to win the Pac-12 South or to even win the Pac-12. But you know, you said yesterday is exactly right. The perception of ASU is going to be determined on the road in Provo.
Yeah.
What we think, you know, we don't know what ASU is after the first two games. We don't know. On Monday, I think I'll know what ASU is. Are they legit or are they a fraud? I think I'll know come Monday.
I think you will, too.
Well,
I think
Saturday night.
Saturday night,
Monday show.
Nationally televised game. I think we're all going to have a much better idea of just how legit ASU football is. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
All right, yay or nay on this?
Okay, yeah.
I sent Chelsea some info on taking her to an Air Supply concert. Air Supply.
I'm a firm, hard nay.
Oh, man.
Firm, hard nay.
Not that they're my favorites or everything, but, you know, even the nights are better.
What was her first response to that? Was that who?
She doesn't know who they are.
Yeah, that's what
I
would
have
figured.
But I said, we have friends that are, you know, more closer to my age group than her age group. I said, ask them if they want to go.
Uh-huh.
We'll go with a bunch of couples. We'll see what it's like.
Where is...
It's at the casino.
Oh, okay.
I'm so lost without you. See, I know the words. What?
Wow.
I'm all out of love.
Jordan's first day back in the office since Monday. I bet you weren't expecting to do a YouTube search of Air Supply on your first day.
You know, working
back
on this show, Air Supply, America, you know,
Barbara Streisand,
Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. I always have them at my fingertips.
This is not bad. They're not bad. They're not. I liked them.
They were an early '80s radio staple, no doubt.
I'll be honest. If this song is on the radio, I'm probably subconsciously singing along.
Yes.
But I think I'm with Burnsy. I would say no to an actual concert.
Even the nights are better. Great song. This good. Making love out of nothing at all. Yeah. All out of love. Like some of that music's good.
I think you jeopardize your marriage by asking your wife to go to Air Supply with you.
Well, and also, are you prepared for the retribution?
Because doesn't crank it, this up, Jordan?
Did you get one concert?
Okay. To Jordan's point, I know where Jordan was going. That there's going to be a trade-off, right?
Yeah, you're going to have to go to a Nicki Minaj concert or something like that.
Oh my God!
Yeah, you're going to have to. I mean, and if I'm Chelsea, that's how I'm playing it. It's I will go to Air Supply with you, but you must go to Nicki Minaj or
something
Ariana
like
Grande.
Yeah.
Somebody. I mean, somebody like that.
I mean, it sounds like Gambo enjoyed Post Malone, so I don't think that'll be an issue for him.
He and Posty are really good friends.
You're the music guy. Isn't that quality music right there?
It's good.
It's good music.
For its era.
It's good
I don't know
music
if it holds up today.
For its era.
I sent it to her today. I asked Supply, yes or no. Asked some of our friends that are, you know, in my age group.
It's a hard
see
no.
If they want to go.
It's a hard no. All right. While Gambo and Mrs. Gambo decide on Air Supply, let's weigh in on our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
You read it, and you go, oh, yeah, it is. There's a tweet from Mark Dalton, who's the VP of Communications for the Arizona Cardinals. He tweeted out this morning, Sunday's matchup with Minnesota will be the first Cardinals home game without Larry Fitzgerald on the roster.
Since Air Supply was relevant.
Since, not quite. Since week 17 of 2003. Now that game was the...
You know how I relate everything? Diamondbacks World Series 2001.
Okay.
So every time you say anything that's 98, 99, 2001, 2003, I automatically go back to 2001. I'm like, that was a freaking long time ago when the Diamondbacks won the World Series. This was 2 years later.
Yeah.
2 years after the Diamondbacks won the World Series, Larry Fitzgerald started playing here And he hasn't missed a home game since.
It's funny. I look at it kind of the same way, but a little differently. I tend to think of like the movies that were out around that time.
Of course you do.
and I was listening to a podcast about the movies of 2004. So just the year after this. That was Anchorman. That was The Incredibles. That was like Spider-Man 2, the one with Doc Ock. And okay, it's
Lord
been,
of the Rings.
Was that 2004? Four, yeah,
I'm looking at it right now. Lord of the Rings was the number one 2004 movie.
There you go. Million Dollar Baby was 2004.
50 First Dates
was 2004.
Scooby-Doo, Monsters Unleashed.
I didn't watch that one.
Kill Bill Volume 2.
Kill Bill Volume 2 was one of my favorites in 2004. Yeah, so I
Shrek 2.
I think about it like that.
Yeah, Dodgeball.
Dodgeball, that's a great 2004 movie.
iRobot, The Bourne Supremacy.
Was it really that long? Since the Cardinals have played, yeah, and it has been, and we can all remember the day. If I just tell you what that game was, it was Nate Poole. That was the Nate Poole, Josh McCown
against Minnesota.
That was Sun Devil Stadium. Think about it. The last time the Cardinals played a home game without Larry Fitzgerald, they were still playing at Sun Devil Stadium.
Josh McCown doesn't seem that old because he played for 30 years. Josh McCown played for a long
time.
That career was unbelievable.
It was.
If you're a backup quarterback, I want to be Josh McCown.
Absolutely. Hanging around like a bad fungus for 25 years. Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah. So is it, I don't think, I'm going to be there on Sunday. I don't think you are, but you're going to be watching it like a lot of people are from home. Is it going to be, if you're there in that building and there's no number 11, there's no Larry Fitzgerald, there's no, I mean, you've been to 1,000 games, that moment where Larry gets that first catch and the whole building goes nuts because it's Larry. We're not going to have that. Is that going to be weird that we're not going to have that?
That's a good question. Is it weird? It's like we're talking about it. So obviously it's at the forefront. But I think the success of the Cardinals against Tennessee, the chance to start 2-0, the excitement of how good this team is. Put it this way. This is the easy way I could put this. If this was a really bad team, that would be more at the forefront.
100% agree. I hadn't thought of it like that, but you're
absolutely
right.
If this was a 4 or 5 win team, not having Larry would kind of be like, okay, that's why a lot of people would go. Chance to go see Larry Fitzgerald play.
Yeah.
But with a team that could battle for a playoff spot, could battle for a division title, that just kicked the crap out of the Tennessee Titans, like, I think the excitement of how good the team is kind of trumps the fact that Larry's not going to be there.
Yeah, Larry Fitzgerald, if you remember from his Let's Go show on Monday, was very happy to see the Cardinals dominate the way they did against the Titans.
I was elated, man, to see them playing that well, to jump out in that big lead, and to see Chandler get to his 100 sack, to be the dominant defensive player and front runner, the defensive player of the year right now was fantastic. And, you know, to see Kyler be able to beat them with his feet and his arms, and it was a decisive victory, and a great team victory. So I was happy to see him get it done.
But I think you're absolutely right. I mean,
if they were bad, we would notice this a lot more.
And because they're good, or at least because we think they're gonna be good based off of how they open week one, suddenly the emphasis is a lot less about Patrick Peterson making his first return back. The emphasis is much less about Larry Fitzgerald in the first game in 18 years without him. And the interest is in, can they go 2-0? Can they continue to be, you know, there's a lot of people around the league who are wondering if the Cardinals are really that good, or was that just kind of a week one kind of fluky thing that happens? Not that beating Minnesota will validate what happened against Tennessee last week, but if they go out and put together another convincing win against Minnesota, people are going to continue to talk about the Arizona Cardinals as maybe a team that can shake up what the projected order was in the NFC West. And all of that kind of eclipses Larry Fitzgerald to a certain extent. And it certainly eclipses Patrick Peterson. He had his press conference today up in Minnesota. He was asked about the reaction he thinks he's going to get, whether it's going to be positive or not.
I'm not expecting anything. You know, if it comes, you know, I would definitely welcome it. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is a week two game that I'm trying to prepare for and help my guys be in the best position possible to go out there and get the dub.
It's interesting because we hear from both of these guys so often. Fitz is talking every single week on this new show that he has.
Yeah.
Patrick Peterson's got a podcast. So, like, it's not like they're out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
Certain guys go away, they go away. You don't hear from them. Other guys, they're
still very much embedded in our consciousness.
Sure. Like, we haven't gone, you know, since he started this show First of all, you had the speculation for about 6 months of what was Fitz going to do. And then we started doing the show. You know, you've got all these comments. You know, but if he was at the golf tournament, somebody would ask him, hey, what are you going to do? Like, so he's still relevant as far as he's out there. We hear from him every single week.
Yeah. Week two kicks off tonight. There's still some time for you to sign up for Bix Picks. Text the word pick to 620-620. Sign up and compete against Dan Bickley for your chance at the grand prize of a tailgate package featuring a Yeti Tundra cooler and grill courtesy of Modelo Especial. Weekly winners will receive a $100 gift card to Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers. Text the word pick to 620-620 to enter. When we come back, stopping the run, huge part of the Cardinals' success in beating the Titans last week. And according to Vance Joseph, it's rinse, wash, and repeat this week against Minnesota. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. John Gambadoro, Dave Burns, hanging out with you on this Thursday afternoon. Every Thursday, Cardinals defensive coordinator Vance Joseph, he gets to meet the media. And, boy, a lot of good stuff to talk about if you're Vance Joseph, right?
Well, they wanted to run this guy out of town after his first year.
Yeah, now he's...
Stick with him, and it was the right call. Stick with Vance. Now 3 years in, everybody understands the system, and he's got this defense humming.
He's got him humming, and like a lot of what you're hearing, this has been a real common theme out of the Cardinals this week. They're trying to guard against overconfidence. They're trying to guard over players patting themselves on the back and thinking they've arrived. And so here's Vance Joseph, not exactly bringing the hammer with him, but also trying to nitpick a little bit to make sure everybody kind of keeps it real.
It's pretty good. You know, obviously it's week one and it wasn't perfect, you know, when you watch the coaches' copies on Monday, but I thought the effort was good. You know, the things that we worked on and went through all summer, all spring, the guys, they nailed it. You know, and that was key to that game, is to nail what we know and adjust what we don't know. And it was pretty good. Except for the red zone. You know, red zone, we were 0-for-2 in the red zone. They scored twice. So it's improvement there, obviously. You know, and we had a chance down there, really, on both third downs to win those series, and we didn't. So outside of third downs, it was okay.
It's unfortunate that you just can't be like, hey, guys, that was a hell of a game. That's unbelievable. I can't believe how good we were. Like, they just can't do that.
You can't do that.
It's like, that was an A-plus performance by the Arizona Cardinals on the road against Tennessee.
Thought exercise here. Let's imagine that Vance Joseph does that for just a second. He has his press conference today. Yeah, we were awesome. We played almost a flawless game.
I don't think they can play better than that.
I don't think they can do any better than that.
That's the tip of the iceberg.
Those are three of the best offensive players in the NFL, and we just absolutely manhandled them. I thought we did better than
that. We can play him 10 times. We'll never play that good against them.
You can't do that.
No.
You can't say that. You got to keep them kind of, sort of humble. And so Vance Joseph saying...
I just don't know if it works.
What, they keep it...
I just don't know if it works. Come on, dude, man.
Players know.
Like, you're a player. Like, we just shut them down.
Players know.
Those guys did nothing. You try, we should have got off the field on third down. Come on, get out of here with that.
Players know.
They scored 13 points at home.
Mm-hmm. You got Julio Jones, A.J. Brown, and Derrick Henry, and you made him look pedestrian. Yeah, Ryan Tannehill, who over the last couple of years has put up numbers that are kind of in the neighborhood of Patrick Mahomes on some level, and you made him look pedestrian.
Yeah.
You got in his face, you shut down the run, you eliminated their two receivers, you blew him out on the road. And so, yeah, you're right, you can sit there and play the humble card and got some stuff to work on. Players know.
You're sitting there, you're like, we made Julio Jones look like Julio Iglesias. I mean, Ryan Tannehill looked like Ryan Gosling. And we let A.J. Brown look like...
A.J. Hinch?
A.J. Bramlett. I mean, come on, coach! Julio Jones looked like Julio Iglesias!
I think you were doing fine until you did the Ryan Tannehill, Ryan Gosling thing.
Well, that's good. That was a good one.
I thought it was Iglesias.
It is Iglesias.
Okay.
I was just going to let him go.
Julio Iglesias.
Close enough. Yeah,
close enough.
I knew what you were talking about.
It's all that matters in life. That's all that really matters. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Vance Joseph was trying to say a lot of stuff today. And when talking about his defense, he said, look, the first few plays that they had on Derrick Henry really set the tone for the rest of the game.
That was huge for us because our first goal was to stop the runner and to have him in his first four or five carries be at negative yards. That was a tone setter. Because the running game gets the play-action pass game going. You know, so if you can't run it, the play pass doesn't look like run. You know, it looks like pass, and that's what happened once we stopped the run. The play pass actually looked like pass, you know, so that was the key to getting that guy stopped early and making those guys adjust, you know, from what they thought we were going to be in. That was huge also. But the plays Chan made early on the runner in the running game with Corey and those guys, that was the key to the day.
Listen, you know, I don't get too far ahead of myself. They have a good year, and this defense is top 10. He might get some interviews for some jobs.
Let's get a little far ahead of yourself, but not too far. You know,
I mean, he's got a good job.
Yeah.
I mean, after 3 years of being a defensive coordinator, if he takes this team to, you know, to places they haven't been in a while, there's a chance that he could be on. Listen, he's a smart guy. He's a good football coach. He's
got the experience of having done it before.
Exactly,
so I'm sure he can think about what I would do different if I could do it all over again.
I think he would get some. I think he would get some coaching.
I agree.
Interviews.
Yeah, I would think so, too. Let's kind of see how this develops. Now, one of the big developments, if you will, from that defense was Jordan Hicks. He was on the field for 90-plus percent of the time. Zaven Collins wasn't. Vance Joseph on what led Hicks to making more of those defensive calls than Zaven Collins, wearing that little green dot on his helmet.
It's the game plan. You know, every week the game plan is going to change. We thought it was going to be a heavy, heavy, heavy run game, you know, so Zaven was going to play a bunch of snaps. But once we got a three or four, you know, four score lead, it became a nickel game, you know. So he lost probably 20, 25 snaps with it being a three wide receiver personnel game. But it's strictly game plan. You know, it can be different this week and different in week, you know, three or four, you know. But every week who we play and what our guys do best, that's our job to find it out and to put it into our game plan. Last week, it was more for Jordan to be the play caller and Zaven to play more base.
And I want to hear your thoughts on that, but I want to play one more real quick. Okay, so I mentioned that green dot on the helmet. That's the guy on the field who gets the signals from the sideline, and it was Jordan Hicks this past week. The defensive play caller, says Vance Joseph, could change week to week.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, you're allowed to have three guys with the dots right in a row. So, you know, every week is going to change as far as what packages you have up for the game. So we'll see, you know. And, again, right now Zaven's playing really well in his role. He played really well last week. Hicksy played well. Isaiah played well. So right now we're trying to figure out who we are as a defense and what we do best. And every week right now it may change until we find out, you know, what we do absolutely best.
So lots to unpack there. What do you think about all that?
I think that Zaven Collins wasn't ready to handle the full load of what he needs him to handle. So Jordan Hicks played 95% of the plays, and Zaven played a lot less. And Zaven wasn't bad, but they didn't throw everything on his plate at once. I think that, you know, you've learned lessons with Isaiah Simmons in the past. I think they might bring him along gradually. Now, I do think it matters, you know, what are you trying to accomplish here? You know, and when you, you know, maybe the game plan will be similar because Minnesota's similar.
Yeah.
Because Minnesota's got, they got Dalvin Cook. They got Thielen and Jefferson. So they've got three weapons, too, similar to what Tennessee has. You want to take their running game away and make Kirk Cousins have to beat you. Jordan Hicks on the field trying to help you stop that run. You know, that could be another thing. But I think that 17-game season, you take a little bit off of Zaven's plate early, and then you start adding on to his plate, and eventually he's running everything.
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting way to answer the question. Once we kind of, because what, it was a 24-6 game? At half or right around half. I mean, it was fairly dominant, and it was fairly early dominant. And because of that, Tennessee probably had to change their approach of how they were going to try to get back in that game. And because of that, that might have dictated personnel and how many plays guys were out there. The funny thing about it, again, not that this is the end-all be-all, because it is not, Zaven Collins' Pro Football Focus grade was really good when he was out there. Well, yes. Not there a lot, but he had a really good grade.
70-something,
I believe it was in the 70s. I think it was like 72.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
No, it wasn't bad at all.
He played downhill well. Like, he went downhill very well. So I think that he's fine, and I think he'll continue to get more added to his plate as the weeks go by.
Yeah, one other quick one from Vance, talking about his defensive backs and how comfortable he is with them.
I'm comfortable with those guys. You know, Murph, obviously, again, in his third season, he's grown up a lot. I knew Alfred could play, you know, once he was healthy again. I mean, he's a veteran player that's been in big games. He's been in the biggest game and made big plays in those games. And Marco Wilson, watching him through the spring and watching him in camp, I knew he can play. But sometimes it's too big for young guys early, and it wasn't, you know. And again, it wasn't perfect, guys. But he was relaxed, and he was playing against good people, and he challenged. And, it wasn't perfect, but he tackled, and he challenged. And he's a fairly smart kid. You know, so that's a good combination for a young guy.
Not perfect. Not perfect. Not perfect. Not
no,
perfect. Again, tap breaks, tap breaks, yeah. tap breaks, tap breaks. But he.
And what happens when you bring home 100 on a test and your parents is like, could be better. Did you not ask to see if you can get 5 extra credit points or something? Like, I mean, it's
well, I've told you the story about my God bless him, my late father. I used to come home with a report card that was like, you know how when you're in elementary school, you get report cards, they graded you on the silliest stuff. And I'd have like straight A's, except for my handwriting. It was like a B. That's a pretty good report card. Got to work on that handwriting, though. Like, seriously, look at this thing. I mean, look at this. This is like a pristine right. report card.
And your brother would come home with all C's.
Yeah, sorry, Matt, if you're listening. Yeah.
He would come home with all C's.
He would come home with all C's. Yeah. Hey, good job,
Great
Matt.
Great job,
way
Matt.
To
way to go.
Good job.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, but work on that handwriting, Dave. Yeah. Gotta work on that handwriting. Okay, thanks.
See what the paper was.
We were just different. That's all. We were different kids growing up. When we come back, just like the defense, the Cardinals' offense looked very impressive against the Titans, and one of the big reasons why can be attributed to something we just haven't seen around here a whole lot lately. We'll tell you what it is next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
Under my breath during commercial breaks, I'm cursing Gambo, by the way. Cursing you.
Why?
Because now I got that stupid I'm All Out of Love song from Air Supply.
Something's telling me it might be Gambo's fault on that one.
Oh, it's just like earworms dug in. I'm like humming it to myself during the commercial break.
So. Believe me, for so long it's been stuck in my head today.
My wife is like, I asked her about it. She goes, Lisa's going to talk to Gabe tonight about it and let me know. So she's trying to say, like, if she can go with some friends. And
Gambo trying to convince Mrs. Gambo.
The only air supply I can do is oxygen or carbon dioxide. That's all I can do.
The first concert I ever took my wife to was Blue Oyster Cult.
Uh-huh.
We ran into Bickley there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That seems appropriate.
That does seem appropriate. Yeah, it does.
Worst concert I ever took her to, which she hated, was Barry Manilow.
Well,
she was not happy that I took her to
Even more
Manilow.
Than, what was that old lady you went to? Where, like, even you were younger than ever.
Petula Clark.
Petula Clark, that's right.
Downtown.
You should have paid Barry to change the song title to Chelsea and not Mandy. Then it would have won her over.
Yeah, that would have been good.
It might have.
I love Petula. She actually thought Petula Clark was pretty good.
Did she? I remember dropping you off at that concert, actually, thinking, oh, Portia, you asked me to give you a ride there.
She's like 90 years old.
Because she met you there. All right, Mitch, what's our poll question today? We're gonna zig when the whole world is zagging here. We're talking ASU BYU in this poll question.
Yes,
today.
We are, because we talk about Cardinals tomorrow, so we're looking at ASU today. What is your concern level for Arizona State playing at BYU on Saturday? We have three options today. You are very concerned. You're a little concerned, or you're not concerned at all.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Not concerned at all. I got to smash them. Let's go.
Woo. Bold predictions by Gambo.
Whoa. I'm going ASU's going to smash him. 2-touchdown win by ASU over BYU.
Whoa. Or he's reading the almanac again.
Listen,
and just cheating.
Nothing against them, but they're still BYU. ASU's got more talent. They got more speed. They're going to go in there, and they're going to spank them.
Usually you're a BYU apologist. This is surprising. I'm a little concerned about this.
No concern at all.
All right.
Here comes the spanking ASU's going to put on BYU.
Survey says. A little concerned. 45.5%.
Spanking.
Not concerned at all. 28.4%. Very concerned. 26.1%. What are you doing?
That's what they're going to get.
Apparently he's doing a spanking motion with
his hand. By clapping his own hand. Yeah,
well,
yeah, I can do that too.
He's trying to impersonate the sound, apparently. Yeah. Every time he says spanking, by the
spanking.
Way, little droplets of spittle just flying from his face.
I used to get hit by the belt when I was
just
a kid.
You guys just have the wipes nearby, Burnsy. You'll be good.
You ever get hit by the belt, Mitch? No?
Am I going to talk about childhood on this show?
Okay.
You know what? If you want to be a part of the Burns and Gambo show, you might have to share some painfully awkward stories of your childhood every now and then.
I could tell one about a rocking horse, but I won't do that today.
We'll leave that one alone. You can vote on the poll question at Burns and Gambo, one word, on Twitter. Cliff Kingsbury yesterday talking about achieving balance on offense.
I think that's always the plan offensively. You want to be balanced, and that's the hardest thing to defend if you are, and that's what we try to do week in and week out. DeAndre is going to command a lot of footballs coming his way, and he should, because every time you throw it to him, something good seems to happen. But the toughest offenses to defend are the ones who can really spread the football around.
Yeah, their balance means a couple of different things. Balance between the run and the pass, and if you look at it, the Cardinals were extremely balanced with that on Sunday against the Titans. Titans, but even balance within the pass game. And it's interesting to think that the Cardinals achieved a little bit more balance than what we're used to seeing out of them when it comes to their wide receivers.
Yeah, you know, last year Hopkins was targeted 160 times, which was 29.4% of the attempted passes. Christian Kirk ended up just under half of Hopkins' targets with 79, which was 14.5%. After that, it was Fitz at 13.2%, Chase at 12.3%, Dan Arnold
your guy
at 8.3%.
Your guy.
Andy Isabella at 6.4, and then Kenyon Drake at 5.7. This past week, Hopkins still led the way with the most targets. He had 8, but that was 25% of the 32 pass attempts. That was followed closely by A.J. Green, who had 6. Kirk and Moore had 5. Chase had 4. And then Demetrius Harris and Max Williams had 3. So Hopkins' numbers went down a little bit, and other guys' numbers went up a little bit. What does that mean? It means that they feel like they've got more of a balanced offense, and they want to spread that ball around a little bit more.
Yeah, there was another story that kind of goes hand-in-hand with this one that you and I both saw on The Ringer about, and it was about a lot of stuff, and I don't want to get into all of it because it was incredibly detailed and very nuanced, but one of the things that really stood out to me was they had the throwing chart for Kyler Murray and where all of his passes went in the game against the Titans.
Oh, yeah.
He actually attempted more passes to the right side of the field than he did the left side of the field.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah.
We're not used to that.
We're used to everything on the left, because that's where all the screens go, and that's where Hopkins lining up, and everything's over there, right?
More to the right than the left.
It was more to the... No, he had, I think, more success to the left than he did the right, but he was more throws to the right than he did the left. But what's funny about this info you got here is, yeah, they achieved better balance. All right, you mentioned 8 targets to DeAndre Hopkins, 6 to A.J. Green, 5 to Kirk, 5 to Moore. But at the same time, they don't want to be too balanced. They were 6-1 last year when DeAndre Hopkins had at least 100 yards receiving. So you want balance, but you also want to make sure you understand.
You have greatness.
You have greatness in him.
Yeah.
And if he has a big game, the chances are really good you're going to win. Mm-hmm. So, again, balance means different things to different people. You have to balance your need to get other guys involved while making sure you understand that Hopkins having a good game usually leads to wins.
I think there are times when you're going to have to rely on DeAndre Hopkins to just be the best player on the field. But I think that's going to be less than last year. Look, let's be honest. You just said they were 6-1 when he had at least 100 yards. Well, he didn't have 100 yards last week, but he dominated, and they're 1-0.
Yeah.
So they're 1-0 in games in which DeAndre Hopkins doesn't have 100 yards. I think they're going to win a lot of games in which he doesn't have 100. But he may have dominated that game more than he dominated other games that he had 100 yards. I mean, he had 2 touchdowns. He was very dominant in that football game.
He was, yeah.
So
He
was very dominant without having 100 yards.
But he didn't need to have 100 yards. I like the balance. I like that other guys are getting involved. I like the fact that Christian Kirk, 96% of his snaps came in the slot, I think, in that game against the Titans. And that's, you know, again, that's with adding A.J. Green, the real benefit to that. And I didn't know, I'd forgotten A.J. Green got targeted 6 times. That number seemed high to me.
He drew a couple of pass interference. Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, he drew 2 pass interference penalties.
But by having him on the outside now, Christian Kirk really becomes the benefactor of that because now he doesn't have to be on the outside. Now he can line up 96% of the time from the slot, which is where he belongs. It's where Rondale Moore belongs.
And look at the results. 5 receptions for 70 catches and 2 touchdowns. His Pro Football Focus grade, which, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of, 85.9, which was the 3rd best amongst all NFL receivers. So he was great in the slot. I mean, it was perfect for him. But the balance, like, let me give you a Suns analogy. Amari Stoudemire could have scored 30 a game.
Yeah.
Like, he could have scored 30 a game. But Steve Nash had to keep Sean Marion happy, and Joe Johnson happy, and Quentin Richardson happy, and there were a lot of mouths to feed.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of mouths to feed. And so Amari, you know, maybe scored a little bit less so everybody else could contribute. That may have taken a little bit of pressure off of him, but it made the Suns really great. But on days that you needed Amari to dominate, you could just go to Amari and say, look, I need 35 today, and he'll give you 35.
Cliff was asked if the offense in week 1 actually exceeded his expectations.
You never know going into week 1. I think you're just trying to prepare the best way possible. We knew that was going to be a challenge going on the road against, one of the teams that's been on the rise in the NFL, and our guys executed at a high level. We protected the ball for the most part, had some early penalties that set us back, but really never blinked. And I thought we played a good tempo, good energy, and we just got to continue to try and get better each week.
That's really something I'm going to be keeping an eye on over the course of the season. Those targets, that balance, how it looks, how they achieve it every single week, if they do, and are there games where DeAndre Hopkins does have to just flat out dominate in order for them to win.
If you've got a really good matchup and whoever they're putting on DeAndre Hopkins can't cover him, I mean, you feed the beast.
You do.
You feed the beast.
Yeah.
Until they decide to double him and try to stop him, you keep going to him.
Text the word Red Sea right now to 620-620. Then listen for your name today at 3:35. You could win a pair of tickets to the Cardinals home opener on Sunday. We're also going to have a one grand prize winner who will score an autographed Kyler Murray jersey courtesy of Pristine Auction. Again, text Red Sea to 620-620. It's a top 25 matchup this Saturday night, one of only three this week in college football. The experts are predicting it could be a rough road for the Sun Devils in Provo. Not Gambo. He says they're going to get spanked. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
No.
Not that they are the end-all, be-all. They're just two guys picking football games. But Stuart Mandel from The Athletic.
Liar!
He's not lying. He's predicting.
Oh, okay.
Do you even know what a lie is?
Sure.
Well, that's not one.
Why do you not have your homework? That was...
Well, that would be a lie you'd be very familiar with. Probably don't even have to think about that lie.
There's always an excuse.
BYU 27, ASU 24, says Stuart Mandel. His colleague at The Athletic, Bruce Feldman.
Liar!
Again, we have to work on your definition of what a liar is.
Oh, okay. What did he say?
BYU 23, ASU 21.
Okay.
Gambo. Spank!
Spank. I'm going to spank him. ASU is going to spank BYU.
Complete with sound effects.
They're not that good. It barely beat Arizona. Arizona sucks.
Okay, Arizona stinks. But then they did Arizona beat Utah,
State, listen,
they were ranked.
Arizona, we're going to find out what Arizona's made. Arizona State is made up. I think they're going to win this game. I think they're going to win it convincingly. I think they got more talent. I think they got more speed. And I expect them to go into Provo and smack them around a little bit and put them back in their place. BYU, oh, we're in the Big 12 now. We're 2-0 against the Pac-12. I think BYU gets their lesson this week. I think ASU puts them back in their place. Knocks them down a couple of pegs. BYU sky high right now. We just beat Utah. We hadn't beaten Utah in 9 tries. We just beat them. We're 2-0 against the Pac-12. By the way, we're in the Big 12 now. You know, I think that ASU is going to knock them down a couple of pegs.
It is interesting reading some of the stuff coming out of BYU about this game and how something that you said just a second ago really resonates, how sky-high they are right now, how they're feeling themselves right now.
Jigsaw sky-high.
Yeah, they're feeling themselves right now because they're 2-0. It's against the conference that didn't want them. A conference that they repeatedly tried to get into and never wanted them at all. Now they're going to the Big 12. They're 4-2 in their last 6 games against ranked teams. Last year, they're coming off a great year in which they won their bowl game. They won 11 games. Their quarterback went to the NFL. He's the number 2 pick overall in the draft. BYU's kind of feeling themselves a little bit right now. And I
don't blame them.
And I don't blame them either. And to be honest with you, especially beating, you said what, first time in 9 years?
They
beat Utah in that, they call it the Holy War. The first time that they were able to do that, you talk about a letdown, not a trap game necessarily, because I think when you're ranked like ASU is, it by its definition can't be a trap game. But I do think it's very possible that BYU it's a letdown game for them a little bit. They're sky high right now. They're thinking they're top of the world. And ASU can come in there and punch them in the mouth on
Saturday
night.
They have a chance to go 3-0 for the second straight year for the first time since 1952. I don't know if you know any movies from 1952. But this would be the first time that they would go back-to-back years starting 3-0 since 1952. Listen, they're a decent football team. They got an opportunity. You know, Arizona State's top 20, right? They're 19. They haven't been there since 1998. BYU's looking for their 32nd win over a ranked team since 74. The Cougars are 4-2 in their last six games against ranked opponents. There's a lot of things that trend well for BYU.
Yeah.
They're playing good football. Their defense has been great. They shut Utah down on third down. They shut Utah down on fourth down. Their defense has been very, very good. But ASU's better. They're better. They have more talent. They have more speed. They've got three running backs. They've got a dynamic quarterback. They've got a veteran defense. I think this is the wake-up call that BYU gets. I think that they get punched in the mouth.
Herm Edwards on Bickley and Murata on Monday about where ASU has improved the most from week one to week two.
I think penalty-wise, we calmed down a little bit there. Running-wise, we ran the ball fairly well, which we need to do. That's kind of our staple. I still think in the passing game, we left some yards out there for sure. Defensively, didn't get any takeaways. Generally, we take the ball away, and that didn't happen. But we held them down. You know, we basically shut them out the second half. Mm-hmm. So I thought for the most part it was sluggish early in the game, and midway through the third quarter we kind of got going and we shut them out the second half, and then the offense was able to score some points in the third and fourth.
I hope you're right. Of course, I hope you're right, because it'd be a lot more fun to come in here and talk about a 3-0 ASU team beating BYU on the road. The hard part for me about this whole, they're going to spank them, they're going to, it's nothing to worry about, they're going to be fine, they're going to be great. We don't know anything about ASU. Nothing.
Because they looked lackluster.
Yes.
In their two wins, they looked lackluster.
They played four games last year. They played two games this year in which they looked lackluster, to your point, against really suboptimal competition in Southern Utah and UNLV. So we have things that we think about ASU. I think this, I think that, but we don't really know anything about them. Anything about them for almost 2 years now. And as Herm was talking about earlier in the week, we certainly don't know how they're going to react on the road, because they haven't played one of these games in 2 years where they've been on the road in front of hostile fans that are going to make your life. So I hope you're right. I think you could be right, but we just don't have any kind of evidence at all about what exactly ASU is or who they are. It's kind of hard for me to just have this supreme confidence about their ability to win this game without knowing. They looked okay against two inferior opponents.
There's more talent. They're better players. There's more talent. There's more speed. They did not play well against inferior competition. Eventually they blew those teams out, but it was a lackluster performance both times around. Now you've got something to play for. Okay, BYU just beat Utah. Okay, they got your attention. BYU, you know what they did? They got your attention. You're not going to come out and play lackluster against this team. You know you'll get beat if you don't play well. They'll be ready. They'll go there, and I think that they'll beat them by two touchdowns. So I feel good about now. If we come in here Monday and they lose that football game, you know, you talked about perception. I mean, the perception is going to be that ASU is not good enough. So we're going to find out. Are you good enough to compete for a Pac-12? Now, winning this game doesn't mean you're going to win the Pac-12 South. Losing it doesn't mean you're not going to win it either. But if a loss to BYU, there's a lot more questions about your ability to get through this Pac-12 schedule unscathed.
Yeah, it's a perception versus reality thing. Lose to BYU, and the reality of the situation is you're still very capable of going to the Rose Bowl. I mean, you still could very easily go to the Rose Bowl. But perceptually, lose this game to BYU, and now people start looking and go, okay, maybe you're not that good. Maybe you're not everything we thought you were going to be. Remember, this is one of the most highly thought of ASU football teams in, 25 years? You come with an advertising like that, you're supposed to beat BYU on the road. And if you can't, people are going to go, okay, maybe this isn't the best ASU football team in the last 25 years.
I mean, it won't be.
Yeah, perceptually, that's going to shape your opinion of them. But reality, they could lose to BYU by two touchdowns the other way, and it still would make a hill of beans for their ability to get to the Rose Bowl. They're still very capable of doing it.
We looked at their schedule, and you're like, oh, they're not playing any big Power 5 conferences. Okay, but BYU beat Arizona and Utah. Okay, this is as good a challenge as you would get from a lot of the teams that you want to go play, Indiana, Kentucky? I mean, there's plenty of Power 5 programs that aren't as good as BYU.
Totally agree. And this is actually one of the three or four toughest games, I think, on ASU's schedule all year. I really do. On the road, that environment, yeah, I think this is one of the toughest games on their schedule. We'll see how they do when we come back. The play of the Cardinals pass rush, it was on full display Sunday against the Titans, and it was headlined, obviously, by Chandler Jones and his five sacks. What was the key to that success? How can they do it again on Sunday? J.J. Watt chimed in. You'll hear what he had to say next on the Burns and Gambo Show.